Live from St. Louis Home Fires at 15053 Manchester Road, it's time for the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show with Frank Schmer and David Sandusky. Featuring cooking tips, tricks, recipes, and the biggest names in food and barbecue. Fire up the grill and let's get cooking. Now, here's Frank and David.
Good afternoon, St. Louis. Good afternoon, barbecue enthusiasts. We are broadcasting live from St. Louis Home Fires at 15053 as the boys and girls are wrapping things up at the Eureka Barbecue Blast. We are set to chat barbecue today with Chad Ward from Traeger Grills, and we are going to talk to the one and only Amy Mills, 17th Street Barbecue. Thanks for joining the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show. I'm Frank Schmer, David Sandusky, Beastcraft Barbecue, sitting alongside David. Good week. Lots of things going on in barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Almost 40 teams out in Eureka competing for the last day and a half. We just got some results, waiting for some others. But want to give a big shout-out to Big Boots Barbecue, who just took the grand champion out there, and Southtown Smoke Squad, who took the reserve grand champion. Julie
nice.
Wood, Chief Wiegand, Chief Brown, the entire community of Eureka came out last night. It was a great, great event. We've got a jam-packed show, so we are going to go right to the Sugar Fire Barbecue Hotline and chat with Chad Ward, the brand ambassador for Traeger Pellet Grills. Chad, you out there?
I am here. How are you guys?
You know, we are terrific. And when I thought about you joining us and the Traeger brand, I thought of an iconic name in the barbecue grill industry, obviously Traeger. And I thought maybe we could divide the interview into a couple of different sections, sort of the history of Traeger, the present day for Traeger, and then where is Traeger headed in the future? Because it's a great story and it's a great company. Can we talk about pellet grilling and specifically Traeger, where it began?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you look at it, Jim Traeger started Traeger Grills in 1985. He wanted to look for a cooking solution that could utilize wood pellet grills. And he came from the wood pellet furnace background. And so that's kind of how it all started. You know, he understood how wood pellets worked and just thought it would be a great solution. There's a legend that goes around. I don't know how true it is. I've never got to hear it from Joe himself. But it was a summer cookout, and he was cooking on a propane grill and had some chicken wings on there, went inside to do a couple other things. Came back out, had a flare-up, burn up all the wings. The next day, he started working on what's now defined as a Traeger wood pellet grill.
Yeah, and specifically pellet grills, for our listeners that may or may not be familiar with the technology, you almost got to be living under a rock now to not hear about pellet grills and pellet technology. But specifically, how does a pellet grill work for that backyard barbecuer that may want to get his arms around something that's really very easy and simple in its design?
Yeah, so if you think about it, you're utilizing wood pellets. They're usually in a hopper, you know, on Traeger grills, or either on the left or right hand side, depending on what model family it's in. And then it's simply an auger system that feeds those pellets to a fire pot that's about a third of the way in the barrel of the cooker. And at that point in time, it's just really setting the temperature you want to cook at, and then let the grill handle metering out the pellets along with the air to get you cooking at that desired temperature that you want. So you get all the ease of kind of set it and forget it, but you get the beauty of cooking over 100% wood fire. So it's kind of the best of both worlds, in my opinion.
Yeah, and specifically advantages with pellet grills, I mean, it's almost foolproof because you settle into that temperature that you designate and you don't get those flare-ups or you don't lose heat. You've pretty much got a consistent, low-maintenance fire that enables you to do stuff for long periods of time. But through innovation, we've really seen Traeger change things, modify things to also achieve the higher temperatures as well, correct?
Yes, we have. So if you look at, you know, after Mr. Traeger started it, you know, it really kind of grew a cult following, especially in the Northwest. and people just really kind of loved it. And so Jeremy Andrus bought the company in 2014, and while he was kind of doing the due diligence on that transaction, he said, you know, I've been in consumer products my whole life, he said, and I've never heard people say this consumer product changed my life. And he's like, every interview I did with current Traeger owners, he goes, everybody said it just changes the way I cook. It changes the way I hang out with my friends and family. It changes the way we eat family dinner. You know, it's changed my life. And so then buying the company, Jeremy kind of, you know, sat and said, all right, well, where are the gaps and what do we need to fix? And a lot of that on the product side we did with the Timberline, which has now been on the market for almost a little less than a year and a half. But, you know, gets up to 500 degrees, if not a little bit higher, double wall insulated, 24-pound hopper for those super long cooks, and better than anything, the Wi-Fi controller. So being able to have a true cloud-based Wi-Fi controller that regardless of where you are, you can see what's going on with that cook and control the temperatures up and down as far as the cooker itself.
That's pretty cool. That's tech to the next level. I mean, these things are reliable for one. Super consistent, easy, right? And now you've got, you know, even further along in the technological front with, you know, you can do this stuff from your iPad.
Guys are always looking for sort of the next best thing. I mean, I call it nerdy barbecue, but it really, what happens is, I think, and Chad, backyard barbecue or competition barbecue pitmasters became popular. And now barbecue companies, grill companies, smoker companies are trying to move those specialty products into the backyard. That's what everybody wants to do. Traeger's done an unbelievable job sort of transcending that competition world into the backyard. Traeger has a few different models, correct?
Yes, we do. We have the two most popular are the Pro Series grills and the Timberline Series grills. And then we have kind of more of an entry-level elite series of grills that also allows people to try it out at a little lower price point, but kind of three families of grills there.
You know, I'm looking at something on their website right now. They actually have a large commercial pellet grill on a trailer.
Yeah.
And I'm just throwing it out there. If you need somebody to test that, you can send a trailer my way. You know, I'll do some reviews for you on your trailer. No big.
Chad, for guys that are already cooking on pellet grills, one of the questions that we get all the time is how important is the pellet? We talk about lump charcoal. We talk about the quality of lump charcoal. We talk about the quality of wood for those guys that are firing up stick burners. How important is the pellet in a pellet grill?
It's very important because, you know, one, you want to make sure you're using 100% wood pellet grill. We own all of our pellet mills, so we control the moisture level of all the product going in. And it's all 100% wood. Actually uses the natural sugars in the wood through high heat extrusion to actually create the pellet. The shine that you see on the pellet is really just a food grade soybean oil that you have to use in the dye so that you can extrude the pellet through it. So it's 100% wood. If you ever have a question about that, a quick test you can do, take a glass of water, drop the pellet in it. If the pellet immediately just turns back to sawdust, it's 100% wood pellet. If it breaks up in a very clumpy fashion, there's some additive besides wood in it.
Wow.
So using a good 100% quality wood pellet, and the second one is keeping it stored correctly. You want to keep those, you know, just like you would if you're throwing logs on a stick burner. You want to make sure it's nice and dry. We want that moisture level to be as low as possible in the wood so that we can get maximum BTUs in the fire pot.
And where do you come down on our friend Malcolm Reed, a friend of the show, had his own opinion about pure pellets versus blends or mixes? Where do you personally and Traeger come down on that?
We offer both. So we've got eight different flavors, if you will, varieties. But then also we have some blends. If you look at our signature blend, it's relatively new. Blends three of our top three flavors. We have our big game blend, which is really good on beef and wild game, white oak, red oak, hickory, and rosemary. So I think if you're looking for that deep, you know, homogenous hickory flavor, then use a hickory pellet. But if you're looking for more of a mix and being able to hit the palate a little bit differently for folks, I kind of like the blends.
No, it's terrific. It is a terrific product. Chad, we're going to take our first break on the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show. Hold the line. More with Chad Ward, brand ambassador, Traeger. Maybe a few recipes when we come back on the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show. Budweiser Big Barbecue Show, chatting all things barbecue every Sunday from 4 to 5 on KFNS 590. More with Chad Ward, brand ambassador, Traeger Grills, Smokers. Chad, first off, how do you become a brand ambassador? How did that happen?
It happened not too long after Jeremy had acquired the company. They were looking to work with some folks, and I was just fortunate to have been a fan of the brand in the past, and cooked a lot of competition barbecue, and had a chat, and it's been a great relationship from there, about 3.5 years. And then we have others depending on, like, if you look at barbecue, we work Danielle Bennett, Diva Q, has cooked on Traeger for over 10 years. Yep. She's one of our ambassadors, and then Matt Pittman from Meat Church. But also we kind of see two other communities that we put a lot of effort into, and that's the outdoor community. The wild game cooks, your fishermen, your watermen, that whole market has really been a great market for us. And then also, on the culinary side, seeing a lot more chefs and restaurants, wanting to add those smoked type items to the menu. So that's kind of the three markets that we address and have brand ambassadors for each of those markets.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up Danielle Bennett's name. She's been on the show before. But how important is that role on those infomercials and the advertising that Traeger does that brings the whole pellet concept to sort of the general public at large?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you kind of hit on it there, right? It's being able to have credible people reach the backyards that don't know about us right now. So being able to get out into that general community and get beyond just the barbecue enthusiast, the person that wants to be the king or queen of the cul-de-sac, and getting into those people that just, they like to cook and eat good food. The infomercial, our communities, as far as like what we do on social media, between Facebook and Instagram, our recipe of the day program. So we release a new recipe at TriggerGrills.com every single day. We also have the Traeger app that has somewhere between 1,100 and 1,200 recipes right now that you can go out and search. So we find all those, not only do we want to introduce the brand to you, but once you decide to get a Traeger, we want to make sure we do everything we can to keep you cooking on it and keep you just as excited about it as we are to have you in the family.
Well, it's working. I mean, social media, you guys have a huge social media presence, and I've noticed that. The brand name itself has become a verb where people are starting to talk about Traegering rather than cooking on a pellet. Now it's Traegering.
It's been a lot of hard work, but I mean, we have to give a lot of thanks to the Traeger owners. I mean, we love talking about it, but it's one thing to tell your story as a brand. It's something totally different when other people tell your story. And we're just fortunate to have some of the best owners and Traeger enthusiasts out there that just want to, find a tall building and scream from the top of it about how much they love the brand and how much they love, cooking on it and being a part of it.
Well, I really enjoyed going through the stuff that you guys have online. And like you said, you got a new recipe every day. And I thought it was really cool to see the versatility of these things. And one of the areas that I thought was just over the top was the cocktails.
Yes.
Smoked ice, for instance. It's genius.
Yep. Yeah, and super simple. I mean, you think about smoked ice and a Bloody Mary, or, we were talking about, actually, I just landed from Bozeman. I taught two classes out there, Traeger Shop classes, and we were talking about it last night, that, a smoked ice can take an average whiskey or bourbon and really elevate it. We love doing that. We've got some great cocktail partners we work with, like Jim Meehan out of Portland. He's done a lot of recipes for us and really a lot of experimenting. But it really is. And we also have a line of some products. We do a smoked simple syrup for cocktails. We do a smoked Bloody Mary mix and a smoked Bloody Mary salt. So we've gotten all into it. We've even got a cocktail cookout in a hardback version. So it's definitely something we've added and we're super excited about.
And, Chad, a couple of texts that we got during the break. What would you say, speaking of smoke, what would you say to the customer that purchases a pellet grill that says potentially does not get enough smoke out of a pellet grill? It seems to be a common thread sometimes. How could they alleviate that concern?
Well, a couple of things. When we were talking in the last segment about the Timberline and some of the changes we had made, one feature we also put on there is what we call super smoke. So between the temperatures of 165 and 225, if you like that heavier smoke, all you do is enable the super smoke mode. That's going to put about three times as much smoke in the chamber as a regular cook cycle. Also, another thing to remember on pellet grills is, once again, it's just fire combustion, right? The lower the temp that you're cooking at, the more smoke you're going to generate, the more smoke you're going to get on the meat. So I would say those two things are pretty key.
And temperature fluctuation seems to be, if a operator, owner of a pellet grill doesn't understand temperature fluctuation, how can that influence his cook?
I would tell you the one thing I try to pay attention to is a lot of people sit there and go, well, you know, I've got it set at 250 and it's bouncing between 245 and 255. What you really care about is kind of still just kind of staying in that sweet spot. And what I always tell people to look at is kind of that hourly average. If you haven't set it 250, I can promise you over the average in an hour, that cook was 250. Now, if you're having big swings or not being able to get up the temp, I would tell you sometimes just take a look at some basic grill maintenance. About every bag of pellets that I burn in my Traeger, I take out the drip pan and there's a little fire pot there. I've got a little $20 vacuum. I vacuum it out. I put a fresh handful of pellets in there. So next time I start it up, it's ready to go. And that has alleviated a ton of those issues just because you're having a cleaner, healthier grill that you don't have to worry about, you know, any extra ash in the fire pot and potentially impacting what heat you can get.
Just a couple of more minutes with Chad Ward, brand ambassador, Traeger Grills. Chad, we talked about the history. We talked about what Traeger is doing now. What's coming up for Traeger? Anything on the horizon?
It's just all about continuing to innovate, looking at other opportunities within the wood pellet grilling market to just be able to offer, you know, more products to the customer. So we're going to continue to, you know, work on our line of grills. We're definitely we feel like we've got a great set of them out right now, but, you know, we're always looking to improve and always looking at what's the next big thing. So we're going to continue to invest in product and invest in community and just want more people cooking on Traeger and changing more lives and, you know, reaching markets we haven't reached in the past.
And just got another text. What is the most popular recipe downloaded from the Traeger website?
3-2-1 ribs.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Any of your favorites?
I'll tell you, there's one. I mean, I love, there's a couple of brisket recipes that are out there. I think I always say if people don't like brisket, they're either vegan or they've never had a good slice of brisket. So I think I love cooking brisket on my Traeger. And then another one I think is so many of us grew up eating dry propane chicken, you know, where it was kind of burnt on the outside and really overcooked on the inside, and I'll say there's nothing better than chicken off of a Traeger. So I would say those two things are two of my favorites to cook on the Traeger.
And finally, before we let you go, care and maintenance of a pellet grill is vitally important, but it's also pretty simple. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, it's really simple. So once again, you want to make sure you're keeping your pellets stored in a dry, airtight container. Secondly, like we had talked about, like I said, about every 20 pounds of pellets that I run through my grill, I'll take the drip pan out. I usually have the drip pan covered. We've got some foil covers that go to the drip pan. If you don't have those, you can always use aluminum foil. It's going to make your cleanup really, really easy. I vacuum out the bottom of the grill in the fire pot. I put a fresh handful of pellets in the fire pot, and that's really about it. Obviously, keep it covered. Try to keep as much of the weather off of it just for longevity. But it's really simple to keep up with. I would say every 15 to 20 hours of cooking, I'm probably investing 10 to 15 minutes in cleaning my Traeger and keeping it well-maintained.
And where is the brand ambassador, Chad Ward, headed next for Traeger?
I Man, I will tell you, I am next heading. I actually have 9 days of vacation coming up on Tuesday, and then we've got some pretty exciting events coming up after that. We are actually having an outdoor a cooking class, a shop class at our headquarters at the end of the month that's going to be outdoors focused. Hank Shaw, great cookbook writer that's really focused on wild game meats, is going to come in and do that. And just kind of, we got shop class going on and a couple, you know, several other events, so it should be a lot of fun.
Traeger's on the front line of pellet. I mean, it is Traegering. When you think of pellet cooking, you think of Traeger, and it is a brand that continues to reinvent itself. Chad Ward, thanks so much for hopping on the line on the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show today. Wish you best of luck.
Hey, you guys, it was a pleasure. If you ever want to talk again, love to do it, man. You guys have a great Sunday.
Thanks, man. You too.
Tell you what, we'll take our next break on the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show. Amy Mills, iconic name in barbecue. Mike, Amy Mills, back in a minute. Stay with us, folks. Back on the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show, broadcasting live from St. Louis Home Fires at 15053 Manchester Road. Beautiful downtown Baldwin. We're going to move on down the road. Amy Mills, 17th Street Barbecue, is on the Sugar Fire Hotline. Amy, thanks for joining us today, taking a couple of minutes.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, absolutely. So, you know, whenever we're scheduled to talk, I always think about the unique perspective that you have had, the daughter of one of the most iconic names in competition barbecue, Peace, Love, and Barbecue, 17th Street Barbecue, but also being part of sort of this madness of barbecue, the barbecue explosion, and you know, and how your dad is kind of that one of those figures on the Mount Rushmore, you being there from an early age, and then, you know, you sort of taking the baton in some ways and doing something that's very difficult to do from one generation to the next. That must have been challenging, but really rewarding.
I think you've nailed it. I don't know that I could add too much more to that.
The restaurant business is where, I guess, now 17th Street has continued the reputation. But in the early days, how did you and your father, Mike, like, how were you sort of invited into that barbecue inner circle?
Well, I don't know that I was invited so much as I was born into it, and then I went away for a while, and as my dad's star was, you know, rising in the food world and he started needing help, I had gone to journalism school and have always worked in advertising, marketing, and PR jobs, and so I just started doing those things for 17th Street, just a little here, a little there, and then it just became all-consuming. When, you know, after I came back into this, I ran far and fast from it, but I started looking at this world with new eyes, and I, you know, there were just things that I enjoyed and stories, and I just thought, you know, these things need to be written about, and that's when I had the idea for Peace, Love, and Barbecue, and so I, you know, I wrote that book, and really at that time I thought, you know, this is it. This is as big as barbecue is going to get, and it has continued to soar. So it's really been an interesting ride for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up Peace, Love, and Barbecue, because one of the questions we got forwarded was, how did she come up with the name Peace, Love, and Barbecue? Because, I mean, really that title sort of says it all and transcends barbecue what it was then, but barbecue what it is now.
Well, it's become effectively the barbecue Bible.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's so kind to hear. I mean, I don't think it's really, it's original in that barbecue is attached to those two words, but, you know, that's been a saying since the 70s, peace, love, and rock and roll, or peace, love, and whatever. So I don't know. It just came to me.
Amy, you know, I have to show some respect here. You know, you guys have paved the way, not just for Illinois barbecue, but in a bigger way, barbecue in general and restaurants. I mean, you've really done something special here, and I think that even going beyond the restaurant and, you know, the classes you guys hold and the network that you've created is just incredible. So, before I even ask you any questions, I just want to, shake your hand over the radio and say, you know, that guys like me, Beast Craft Barbecue, we don't exist without you. And, certainly respect everything that you guys are doing.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you.
That being said, how important do you think it is that pedigree to, the future of barbecue?
To the future of our barbecue or just barbecue
in
general?
Sure, to the future of your barbecue. Like, I mean, barbecue's family, right? But in your case, like, it's just so family. How is that progressing through your family?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, my children are back away and doing different things, but they come back to do specific barbecue events. It's very important to our family, and it started before my dad. It started with his father, and so it's something that all my cousins are very proud of and involved in some ways. You know, they love to come to events and to help out. They're all, you know, professionals, and they all have their own lives and jobs, but it's definitely something that my entire family is very, very proud of and very part of. And I think, you know, the important thing is you can just really never rest on your laurels and think, okay, this is it, because we're still out there fighting every day for, you know, to put out the best barbecue and make sure that everyone is happy and, you know, juggle staffing issues and food issues and all of those things. None of it ever really becomes easier. And the minute you think, this has been a really good day, tomorrow something is going to happen. You don't know what it is, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what would you say, Amy, maybe the biggest difference in, maybe even from a restaurant perspective or competition barbecue or just the popularity of barbecue, between barbecue now and maybe barbecue 20 years ago?
That is a very good question. I think the bar has been raised very high. And the bar, it gets raised when you have any kind of recognition. People expect more. And you can even see it in your reviews. You know, once we got a review that said, there was, I didn't like the magic dust on my French fries. 3 stars. So I'm like, okay, you liked everything but the magic dust on your French fries. You know, people are very particular. And people are smarter about barbecue. All of the television shows and all the things that have given us all a platform have also educated our public. And so, you know, right or wrong, they have different expectations too. And so managing those expectations, I think, are a challenge for everybody in the barbecue world.
Yeah, I mean, the KCBS judges come through the door, go through you. David, you and I have talked about that. Or St. Louis Barbecue Society judges.
Everybody's a critic.
No, don't get David started on Yelp. But I agree that the bar has been raised. But specifically, like, are there things that your dad would say that – he loves about what's going on with the barbecue and the barbecue movement? And then are there things also that you and him look and scratch your head about, like, boy, oh boy, that's crazy?
I'm not sure I think any of it is crazy, but I do think that we are all judged by, and maybe this always was this way, but social media amplifies it. We're judged by people's expectations and by their memories, their taste memory, their experience. So when you have someone from Texas, our barbecue is very different from that. So you are having to manage that expectation. I think one big difference is, for example, we have always had 2 barbecue sauces, an original sauce and one that was just a little bit spicier, which we call a little kick. And only one is on the table, though. And now people expect to see more sauces on the table. So we do have more sauces. We still don't put them all on the table, but we will offer them to people because they do, you know, somebody will say, I didn't like that sauce. I wanted a sweet barbecue sauce. Or, you know, we have had a lot of reviews that will say, you know, not enough sauce variety. And again, I didn't know it was a barbecue sauce contest, but that right. is an expectation. So you have to think about how many times you're going to hear that before you're going to do something about it.
And let's talk about that barbecue process at 17th Street. Is it the same process now as it was when you opened? I kind of feel like sometimes folks try and get too cute. Good barbecue 20 years ago is still good barbecue today.
I think that our process is very, very, very similar. We have certainly tweaked things. You know, we're always learning. If we taste something really good somewhere, we'll ask questions and, you know, think about, do we need to change any of our procedures or anything? You know, we definitely have tweaked, but I would say, you know, those ribs taste the same. And those are the ribs that are so close to what Apple City Barbecue won with way back when. And, you know, we tried to come back and do that again 6 years ago and got a 27th place instead of a first place because they were not sweet enough. Mm-hmm. And I think the sweet barbecue is something that everybody is so into, and part of that I blame on competition and part of it just kind of on the American palate, but that sweet barbecue taste and flavor profile, you know, our barbecue is not that. So that's just not a place where we are going to go.
Absolutely. Don't change that recipe, and don't change the dial. From the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show, we're going to be back with Amy Mills in just a second. Stay with us. We are back on the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show. A couple of messages during the break. Questions for Amy. When are you going to write Peace, Love, and Barbecue 2?
That's a good question. Well, I did write Praise the Lard.
Yep.
And that book is a very different book from Peace, Love, and Barbecue. It's really more about the story of our family. It's a love letter to our town and to our family and to our employees and our own crew. And it really takes you behind the scenes of 17th Street. I would love to update Peace, Love, and Barbecue, but a publisher is really not interested in that. And I have been told repeatedly it lives in a time and a place, and it is going to be the way it's going to be. So unless I interest my publisher in reissuing that, and the publishing company that published that has undergone a sale and kind of went back to its roots of different, more outdoor publishing, my book was a big departure for them. So I don't think that's going to happen. But you never know. Never say never.
I came across your digital series, and I'm just completely blown away by it. You know, I love the idea of taking a group of people and making them better at what they do, and you know, getting them back in their restaurants with some better information and things like that. Can you talk about the experience with that? You know, was that a highly difficult thing to do? Was it impactful? How did you feel about that whole situation?
Well, that's interesting. It was a fabulous experience. We started off, you know, working on that with a production company, and they were trying to pitch this idea to a network. And it's hard, you know, networks don't really know what they want these days, unfortunately. But we did so much filming that we decided to just go ahead and finish it out as a digital series, even though it wasn't picked up by a network, because we believed so much in the process and in what was happening. And the people who were chosen, they did a masterful job of casting that show. And, you know, I had nothing to do with that. And they, you know, these people have done lots of television shows, so they know what makes good TV. And it was such a magical group of people. Everybody really bonded. We're all still in touch. It was just, I can't say enough about the experience.
When is your next group consulting session?
So we have three a year. We have a business of barbecue class, a catering master class, which will be in November, and then the whole hog extravaganza, which will be in January. And we really have scheduled those sort of around less busy times in the restaurant and the traveling circuit because we're all very busy. And we always hold them on a Monday and Tuesday because that's when most people can be away from their own restaurant. Those are the least busy days. And they really are geared toward restaurant professionals, people who are in the business or want to be in the business. You know, we've had lots of new people who think they want to be there. Just really all kinds of people come to that, to those classes. It has been hugely rewarding. I was pulling some stats for an article the other day, and we are entering our 10th year of the classes. We've had over 1,000 people from 48 states and 16 countries who have come through. Wow. And that is just astounding to me. And some of them have come back as many as 7 times.
Wow. Yeah, I tell you, I just got another text. They keep rolling in for you. I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this. What do you think of judging now versus judging when you competed more?
Well, that is a good question. We do still compete at Memphis in May, and we were thrilled to hear our name called this year with the 9th place in Whole Hog. We have had 3 top 10 finishes in Whole Hog in the past 5 years. And this year was a totally different experience in that 2 of our Whole Hog judges have not ever judged before. And that is highly unusual because usually the people they send out on site Whole Hog have experience. But I have to say, I'm not sure that's always a good thing because, you know, you have the super judges and we can all find all kinds of things to say, good and bad, about the judging. But the bottom line is you can't have a barbecue contest without the judges. And so we sort of have to take the good with the bad there and hope that it all balances out. And I think you can see by the people who continue to win, no matter where they are or in what state they are, that there is definitely a profile and a style of barbecue that is a very winning style.
And maybe in a sentence or two, another inquiry, what would you say very simply to a guy that has competed in a couple of contests, thinks he's interested in opening up a barbecue restaurant?
I would say learn a whole lot about the business of barbecue because you will get to do very little cooking. You're going to be doing very busy running your business.
Mm. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, and, you know, maybe with your dad, where did your dad fit in that spectrum for opening up? Was he more the cook? Was he more the business piece of it? Where did he excel specifically, and how did you complement that?
So he is very much the cook, and he learned the business. You know, he started off, he's barbecued his whole life. He barbecued for free for people all the time. People would have him cater their class reunion or their wedding. He built barbecue pits in high school to earn extra money. He owned a bar in the mid-70s to the early 80s, and he had barbecues and fish fries every weekend and gave the barbecue away in order to get more people to come in and drink. So when he bought 17th Street, which has had a barbecue sandwich and a hamburger served for over 100 years, and it was a bar. So when I was little, it was a bar owned by somebody else, and you could go through the drive-thru and bring home bags of barbecues or hamburgers, but obviously children were not allowed in there, and very few women really frequented that place as well. But he made it into a restaurant and, you know, had the barbecue. The menu has grown over the years because we have people who eat there, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a week, and so we want to give them a little bit of variety, and we want to be that place where people can come and they can have a barbecue salad as well as just the regular meat, you know, trying to satisfy all the people in a party, in a dining party, you know how that goes. But he definitely has learned the business. And I think he's very frugal, very frugal. He can tell you how much every single latex glove and every little strip of paper towel costs. And if he wasn't like that, we would not be in business to this day. That's for sure.
And maybe finally.
And I would say that I'd probably complement that in more of the marketing and business side of things. But I could, you know, I can certainly cook as well.
And finally, as this barbecue landscape continues to change, when it's all said and done, what is the Mills family going to be most proud of?
I think that we definitely are the most proud of the relationships. And we just have this web. If I were to take a map and put little dots or pins on the places where we know people and have had wonderful memories, and you know, there are people to whom we are very close in this industry, and people you can call and they would drop everything and be there for you. I think, you know, all of the accolades and all of the trophies, all of those things are wonderful, but at the end of the day, it's really all about the people and the relationships and being and providing that place in our little town and what we've been able to do in Southern Illinois, shining a spotlight on our area and just providing this place that's really become a community seat and a community gathering place.
Terrific.
I think that is probably what my dad is most proud of.
It's great things, great people, great barbecue, 17th Street Barbecue. Amy Mills, thanks so much for jumping on the line today on the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure.
Absolutely. Chat soon. I tell you what, David, another great show.
Yep.
Great people, iconic names in barbecue, and that's what we do every Sunday on the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show. Remember, if it's 4 o'clock and it's Sunday, it's the Budweiser Big Barbecue Show. Thanks for listening.